670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Tuesday. Let's see. Today on a radio show, we have a special guest in the next segment. Chris Boyson from LSAC is going to join us as tickets for Hoops for St. Jude go on sale. It was just a week ago, Jeffrey. I was at the press conference. We had to tape Fishman early because I had to get down there to see John Calipari at the press conference. Now tickets are going on sale. We'll talk to Chris about how all this came together. And honestly, he's got an interesting story, too, about the work that he does on behalf of St. Jude. Really instrumental in the success of the marathon as well. So we'll talk to Chris about all of that in the next segment. Let me ask you, Jeffrey, will there be more than 10,000 people at that game?
I'm going to say yes.
More than 15,000 people?
I'm going to say no.
I think that's right. I think between, if you did, it would be extraordinary, right?
Oh, absolutely.
What would it take if you had Tennessee coming in here? What if you had Kentucky coming? Kentucky would get you more than 15,000 people because Kentucky fans would come.
Yeah, but I mean, we're going to get Arkansas fans too. Maybe not nearly
not as many
as
Kentucky fans,
but there's a lot of Arkansas fans. Arkansas.
I'm just saying, what is the single biggest draw for a real game you could get? Is there anyone you could have to fill up FedEx Forum at this point for a college basketball?
I know it's
game
not apples. University of Memphis. I know it's not apples to oranges because of the distance, but Tennessee has sold out an exhibition against Duke. I do wonder if Duke comes to town, what does that mean?
I don't think so. I think more. Let's talk regular season games here. Okay, regular season games. If you could get a regular season home game at FedEx Forum,
I think I'd put Tennessee one.
I'd put Kentucky one. You'd put Tennessee one?
Yeah, just because it's still there's still so many.
They
Tennessee.
Sell out. You think Tennessee would draw better than?
I mean, I think we're splitting hairs.
You think either one would be sold out?
As close to it as you can get in this day and age.
I don't think Duke would be because they wouldn't bring Dukies. I mean, they'd bring some, but they wouldn't, you know, Dukies, there's not as many of them.
Right.
And they don't live around here. Right? So so I do think you'd get a bigger just sort of generic local person turnout if coming out to see Duke, right? It also, some of it depends on what that Duke team looks like that year, like Cooper Flagg, like, you know what I mean? Like different Duke teams would draw, but that would, Kentucky and Tennessee would be the two that would draw vigorously. But anyway, I think Arkansas is very close, and obviously this is an exhibition game, but Arkansas with Calipari, first time back. Now, he's been in that building coaching Kentucky for the NCAA tournament, came here for that. So it's not like his first return to Memphis, but it is first return to Memphis against a Memphis team.
Yep.
That is certainly true. It's for a great cause, obviously, it goes without saying. And so you'll have Memphis fans trying to figure out who's who on that team, and you will have Arkansas fans, and I think pretty clearly north of 10,000. People keep saying that, last year, I hear this all the time, last year was disappointing. I didn't think it was bad. Like it wasn't, certainly wasn't sold out. I don't know what people thought. It was an exhibition game, right? You know, so it was an exhibition game thrown together at the last moment. I don't know. I thought in the end it was fine. It wasn't some overwhelming response, right? It wasn't, but it was fine. And but this one should be better, I think, between 10 and 15,000. And we hope it obviously is going to be a success. And what you hope is that it will be a impetus for regular season games between Memphis and Kentucky. And if John, who was talking very warmly about his relationship with Memphis, the city, and the university, while he was here for the press conference, if he leaves here with that same sense of good feeling, I don't rule it out. John did say, and we mentioned this before, that he doesn't like playing people he doesn't like. That's what he said. But the flip side of it, and we see this all the time, coaches like playing people they do like. So why, for example, did Rick Barnes once agree to a series with Memphis?
He liked Tubby.
Because he liked Tubby. Why will Rick Barnes now apparently never play a series against Memphis?
He doesn't like Penny.
Because he doesn't like Penny. So I don't think it is in John's nature to agree to home and homes that might disadvantage his team. He likes to play neutrals, so his team isn't disadvantaged. But I do think if he leaves here with a warm feeling, the downside of playing Memphis is pretty small. Like, Memphis is a reputable team. It won't be a bad loss if they happen to lose. It'll be a good win if they happen to win. And so, to me, I think there is a reasonable possibility that this will lead to good things. I would like, honestly, and maybe we'll ask Chris about this, the University of Memphis is sort of reaching out to pass the former players. They're sort of arranging that and making it happen. It will be paid for, their trip, by the organizers, right? It'll come out of the budget for this. If Derrick Rose wants to come, they will fly Derrick Rose in, right? And so, and that will be, I imagine, my understanding is, I think, maybe I'm speaking out of turn, that'll be paid for by the event. And
as long as the Bengals aren't involved.
And you would hope, as long as the Bengals aren't, and you would hope that they're doing a good job of reaching out, and that they have it was great to have Sean Taggart at the press conference the other day, but you don't want it to be just Sean Taggart, with all due respect.
No, you want it to be all the guys.
You want it to be all the guys.
Yeah.
So maybe we can get some update about how progress is going on with that as well. Anyway, we're going to have Chris Boysen in the next segment. We got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. There's a new list. The New York Times had a list of the 50 best places to eat, Jeffrey. None were in Memphis across the country. And I consider that just a slap on the face. No, but there was one in,
is it new best places to eat or best places to eat? Sorry.
I don't think it's new best places to eat, but I think it is an updated, and I don't think it's just, you know, they try to be a little current, right? You know, interesting. So let's see what it is. Let's see. Places to eat. There was one in Jackson, Mississippi. That was on the list. And there was one in Knoxville. J.C. Holdway. Have you ever heard of that?
I've not. Jackson's probably, I know there's a, I think there's like a Michelin restaurant down by the coast in Mississippi, but no. I don't know the Jackson place.
There's one in Chattanooga, Calliope.
Not familiar either.
There's one in Birmingham, and they were,
which one's the Birmingham one?
Bayonet. Maybe it's called New York Times. Do you know your eating places?
Well, my aunt and uncle live there. Now my brother lives there.
Birmingham is a good eating, is a good eating town. But I think Memphis is a good eating town. I'll be honest. I never have a shortage.
I was say, unfortunately, I think we're a good eating town.
Here we go. America's best restaurants. The restaurant, here are the 50 best places in America right now is what it is described. So it's not new. There's one in, the only one in, there's two in New Orleans.
Emeralds, that's it.
Emeralds. Well, you only have 50. There's only 50 across the whole country, right?
Yeah. You can put all 50 in New Orleans.
St. Clair. Emeralds and St. Clair. Have you been to Emeralds?
I have not been to either.
Yeah. And, okay, the Mayflower Cafe is the one in Jackson, Mississippi. And the one in Calliope in Chattanooga, and J.C. Holdway in Knoxville. Anyway, Chris likes to eat. We'll talk to Chris about that. And then it's Fish on Friday on Tuesday. We'll talk to him about, I honestly haven't gotten the list yet. I don't know what we're talking to Fishman about, but we'll talk to him about something interesting. I am certain. So, Jeffrey, there was, it was two nights in a row now. We've had games where if you went to bed early, you were surprised by the result. This one was not the epic the epic performance that of the previous night, but it was revealing, stunning a little nonetheless. And it's interesting because Sunday we had two, let's be honest, all-time great quarterbacks.
Yep.
Both of them
dueling.
Do you think they are both, and maybe top 10 history of football quarterbacks already?
It's really tough to be there because neither has a Super
Bowl. I think both are top 15 quarterbacks. I mean, Dan Marino's top 15 quarterback, right?
Yeah, I just really think it's hard to be in that top 10 without a title.
Okay, here we go. You're going Brady. Obviously, you're going Montana, right?
Peyton.
You're not Unitas. You're going Peyton.
I put Breeze.
Oh, come on, man. Really?
You want to go look at the numbers?
Okay.
It's overwhelming.
Breeze?
You are a height supremacist.
Breeze? You're putting Breeze in there. Right now, let's be honest. You're starting a franchise. You want Breeze over Josh Allen? No. The answer is no.
I mean, the game is so different now because now you have to have a quarterback that can move.
Okay, so we got four. Exactly. You can't move.
But like you're playing, but I'm saying is, we're putting
Bradshaw in there?
He's one of the most overrated of all time.
Are you putting Aikman in there?
Aikman's, God.
I mean, both those guys are winning
Rodgers,
quarterbacks, right?
Rodgers.
I think you got to put Rodgers in there. Who else? Marino. I mean, yeah. I'm putting Marino there.
Marino's my only non-title.
I don't have a Super Bowl. I don't care. To me, what happens, I imagine that Josh Allen may not have a Super Bowl.
Elway,
definitely.
Favre.
It's funny, though. I don't think Favre is better than either of those guys we saw Sunday night. I just don't. He had a really long career, and he won a Super Bowl?
A Super Bowl.
To me, I don't do the... For me, it's much more important for an NBA player, but because you have more impact on what's happening. Dan Marino didn't win a Super Bowl, not because of Dan Marino. And I'd take him over Favre.
Staubach.
Certainly. Is Staubach just a winner, or was he great?
Staubach's pretty great, especially in an era where...
So we got...
We've left off Mahomes.
Certainly Mahomes. Well, I mean, we're just doing this off the top of our head. So we got Brady, Montana, Unitas, Peyton, that's four. Rodgers, Elway, that's six. Favre, Staubach, and Mahomes, 7, 8, 9. And then if you want to do Bradshaw and Aikman, that's 11. And Breeze is 12. That's 12. And Marino's 13.
And then what do we do with, like, Steve Young?
Steve Young, awesome. I mean, and then you have other guys who... Okay, they're both top 20 quarterbacks in the history of the league.
Yeah, but like that's the other thing. Their story's not written.
Right. I won't be surprised if... I do not believe both of them will get titles. I do not believe that.
So I think we say that, but keep this in mind. In the peak of Brady, it felt like... Remember the first run? So the first three-peat.
Yeah, I know. Then he took a big break.
Ben gets two.
Right.
Eli gets two. Like, there's a 10-year window. Like, I do think the Chiefs are in this weird spot of, are they in that window where this is where you get them?
To the larger point, we had two all-time greats already dealing Sunday night.
Absolutely.
And last night, we had two, wonder what they're going to be's, figuring it out.
One guy making his first start.
Not really dealing, but sort of figuring it out. Both under now... quarterback whispering coaches, right? And so early on...
One is a for sure quarterback whisperer.
Yeah. Early on, Caleb Williams comes out and is perfect. He's absolutely perfect. Starts 10 for 10. They literally did not have a touchdown on the first drive all season long last year. Boom! They've got it.
Which is damning of coaching.
Which is incredible. Which is absolutely damning
because that's
of coaching.
A script. That's the script. These are the best plays we can put together for this.
Yep. Literally never damn worked to produce a touchdown. In the first half, he was 13 of 16. Completion percentage, almost 82%, 81% basically. Completion percentage. He was really good. It's still a miss here or there. But, like, you would take it.
Absolutely.
And then J.J. McCarthy, through three quarters, had 56 passing yards and a pick six. And I swear to God, Kirk Cousins was trending on Twitter.
Yes.
Because you're like, holy smokes.
This is
these
bad.
Arrogant Fs. They get rid of Cousins. Last year's starting quarterback is in Seattle now.
Cousins thing I'm putting aside. I mean, I guess you could trend on Twitter because he's available.
Right, he's available. That's why he was.
To me, it's like, this is that one where it's like, oh, this was the risk of getting rid of Darnold.
Right.
Because you knew Darnold, like, yes, he had a bad
end of the year, but you knew
still
that he,
won
you knew
14
he
games.
For you. But Cousins was really trending because he's available.
Yep.
They got to go get Cousins.
Yep.
They got to go get Cousins. They don't make the play for Aaron Rodgers, and they're like, no, we're going to go with our guy. And you're like, holy smokes, this is going to be a really good team, and they are going to be brought down by this quarterback. I mean, the stuff you saw on Twitter, a lot of references to, look what happens when he doesn't know what the other team's plays are.
Yep.
You know, he was bad at Michigan. He wasn't great at Michigan. Like, all of this, he was just getting absolutely eviscerated, as was his head coach and management for making the choice. And then he comes out and leads three touchdown drives in the fourth quarter. The Vikings go on to win 27-24. By contrast, Caleb Williams, who in the first half, completion percentage of 81%, second half, and what happened here was the Vikings started dialing up the blitz. They blitzed 43.5% of the time in the second half. And he was 8 of 19, 42% completion percentage. Missed a bunch of wide open dudes. And if you go expected points
EPA.
Added, do you like that?
EPA is a good stat. It can get overused, but yes, it is still.
Second half, expected points added for Caleb Williams, -0.18, which was, compared to all quarterbacks across all second halves in game one, 28th. And so there you have it. Vikings win 27, Bears 24. It's interesting. If I had, before the game began, told you that the Vikings would win 27-24, if you were a Bears fan, I think you'd say, you know what? I want to win the game, but I take that. What it means is our offense is pretty good against a very good defense, right? But I think the way it played out, like right now, you can see plays that Caleb makes that are special, right? Throws he makes that are special, but he still does crazy stuff. Right now, I think you'd take Caleb over JJ if you were starting a franchise. But it didn't look good for Caleb in that second half.
So it's one of those things where if I just tell you the final score, 27-24, Vikings beat the Bears, you're not stunned.
No, you're like, that's basically what I would have expected.
Right.
And it's a good offensive performance by the Bears. They obviously weren't inept against a good defense.
But when you break it out, the quarter by quarter scoring, it is jarring because you see 0-6-0-21.
Right.
And then it's 7-3-7-7, one of which is a defensive score, and the other is low-key garbage time. I guess the problem that I had...
Well, that's the thing. The Bears' offense only had to put up 17 points.
Right? Correct. The problem that I had with last night is I did feel like at times I was watching, I guess, a different game than Twitter was. And I get it. Caleb Williams' personality, he lends himself to getting dunked on. Like, it just does. Like, it's part of it. And if people can't understand that, I'm sorry. Like, that just is the way that it is. He was under duress all night. They could not run the football. They had a 19% rushing success rate, which was dead last of every team in week one. And it was dead last by like 20 or 31 was closer to 30 than it was to 32 with the Bears. So that's how bad it was. And he was basically just kind of running for his life, having to make plays. I personally I felt worse about Ben Johnson last night than I did Caleb.
It's funny. How can you feel bad about Ben Johnson, but also like the Lions are sunk without Ben Johnson.
Because it's, but that's not what I think about the Lions. Right. You know that.
I know.
What I think is I'm worried about their offensive line has been so good for the last 3 years. And now their offensive line, they're replacing guys, and the odds of you hitting every single time on your replacement, it's really hard to do. But I did find myself going, it's a lot easier to scheme up the Lions the last 2 years than it is right now with the Bears.
I guess what I would say, though, is that, well, first
the challenge
of all,
was so stupid. The challenge is one of the dumbest challenges I've ever seen.
It's one of the, first of all, it's game one.
Yes, and okay. It's a young first-time coach.
It's game one. Just for anything you saw last night, it's game one. Secondly, if you're going to judge a young quarterback under new tutelage, the Vikings defense is probably one of the tougher tests. It's not necessarily
they
a fair test with all the things they throw at him, particularly in the second half. So I don't know. So I would say both of those things in Caleb's defense. In terms of one, he was running for his life. Was he running for his life or was he running? Because that's what he does. The intentional grounding penalty was just stupid. They're in field goal range.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on
They're up 7 at 17-6. It was just a boneheaded play by your quarterback.
But there were so many times he's getting the snap and they're just on him. Like some of the running around. Like my thing is, him running around kept them in it.
They also had four false starts. Like in the first half,
it was terrible. Like they were so slow getting out of huddles. Like there were delay of games. I mean, it was terrible.
They had that 4th and 3 in the second quarter, and they had to call timeout before it because they weren't ready. Is that though? Now, so is that? Let me ask you this: is that coaching, or is that Caleb not managing the team well? Daniel Jones is playing over Anthony Richardson is
getting him in and out of the
mechanics,
huddle.
Yep. Right? Game mechanics. And is game mechanics on Ben Johnson?
So the specific one you're talking about is all on Ben Johnson remember how long it took him to get the play in? Remember they're looking over to the sideline, what's the play? And you could see him like, he was trying to find his like go-to play on Madden.
I'll say this. To me, although a little bit like Sunday, I don't think Sunday was a hell of a game and my guys won. I don't think the book is written, you know, on either of those two teams and their season by any stretch. And I would say the same thing about last night. Last night was J.J. McCarthy wins. J.J. McCarthy looks like the guy. There's a lot of stuff. We got our guy. I have not seen all I need to see.
You had one good quarter.
And so, again, maybe that's it. But
I do have faith that Kevin O'Connell is going to get production out of him.
A, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have chosen him. And I have some faith in his ability. You know, the fact that he chose him and his confidence gives me confidence on the front end. And then B, you're right. I think he's going to get the most out of him. He's got great weapons. They fix their offensive line like that there. But I don't think the book is written on either of these guys. I'm not giving up on Caleb Williams, and I'm not. And I think I still might take Caleb Williams. I would take Caleb Williams if I'm starting a franchise tomorrow over J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, I'd still bet on talent. I did find myself, I don't know how you felt, I found myself watching that game going, do both these teams stink?
Yeah, I don't think they stink. I don't think the Vikings stink because the Vikings defense is good. And
but like I thought the Bears defense was pretty good too.
Yeah, no, I don't think either team stinks. I'll tell you who stinks. In fact,
my team.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I was looking at the
what power. Just a nut kick yesterday. Oh god, they teased me on Sunday.
Oh, and then they're not starting Jackson Dart. The story comes out that they're not starting Jackson Dart. I heard Dan Graziano talking about it, and he was depressed because he's covering that game. You know, if you're covering that game, you want it to be the Jackson Dart game.
Absolutely.
Right. So, all right. We were talking about who stinks. Go ahead. Tell me who you believe. This is just where you're guessing one outlet's bottom five of the power rankings. Who's in the bottom five?
We got to start with the Saints.
No.
Really?
New team
number one?
And this is based on what we saw.
On
Saints weren't as embarrassing.
Panthers?
No, this is impossible to guess. They're all sad. Giants, your Giants, 31.
Okay. Who's 32,
I'm sorry, Dolphins, 32.
Okay.
And yeah, that's the most humiliating.
Vibes,
right? The worst loss. That's sort of what we're going for.
100%.
Right? The worst loss is Dolphins 32, total ineptitude, right?
Yes.
Giants 31, total ineptitude.
Yeah, 6 points on offense.
And then the Saints were not as inept. I mean, whatever. They lost 20 to 13, right?
Yeah, I'd say that was more the Cardinals.
Spencer Rattler threw it 46 freaking times.
Yeah, that was a problem.
It's just unbelievable. So Saints 30, they probably started at 32, right? Panthers sad. That's sad. All of these teams, by the way, sad.
Yes.
Tell me when we're not up. We're not to sad. So we got Dolphins sad, Giants sad, Saints sad, Panthers sad. Are the Pats sad? I don't think they're sad yet. They did.
Can we have an honest discussion about Drake May?
Did not look ready for the
Step. Also, I've never seen a guy get crowned like that. And I guess
he did get crowned.
Maybe it's because Pats fans were watching, like, Mac Jones
beat
to
the Bills.
But like,
no, he didn't beat the Bills.
No, the
what's his name from Tennessee?
Joe Milton got he beat got Bill, the Cowboys
yeah,
deal.
He did. I don't think they're sad yet, though.
I'm agreeing that they're not sad, but like this idea that
I can see he was prematurely crowned.
Yes, like Jay, if you want to crown Jaden Daniels, by all means, go ahead. But like I did not understand.
Bryce Young was prematurely prematurely resurrected.
Correct. Agreed.
And then we get, I think, the first non-sad. Well, Patriots aren't sad. Titans 27.
Again, I'm telling you, if you watch the game, there was stuff from Cam Ward to like actually get excited about.
That's pretty good in a 12 of 28 for 112 yards.
I'm telling you, there were moments where you're like,
and then Browns really deserve better. They're 26.
They're still sad.
You think they're still sad?
They're still sad.
And then you get to the Jets, not sad.
No, I think if you're the Jets you can sad. Have a little no. bit of like quiet
feisty,
optimism.
Feisty, not sad. All right. We have a lot of other things.
Well, hold on. Who is the top of that power rankings? Do they keep
want to go to the top?
Do they keep the Ravens at one?
No. You couldn't keep the Ravens at one.
Sure they could.
Let's not be absurd. Who would you put at the top of your
Eagles.
Power rankings? Eagles are one.
Okay.
Two. This is based on first game and what we know. It's both of these things. But I think a lot.
I would be tempted. I think I would go Bills. I would be tempted to put the Packers at two.
They're Packers. Packers were impressive. They were more impressive
than
the Bills.
They were dominant.
They were dominant. Bills were not dominant. Bills at three.
Then Ravens.
Chargers. Chargers beat the Chiefs. Ravens lost.
I still need to see. Yeah, the Ravens did look like the most insane game I think we've watched it.
Well, they're going to get to the Ravens. They're going to dock people for losses, right? So Chargers and then Commanders at five. Although, I don't know. Like, what was that? You tell me. You saw it. Absurd to put this 49ers.
Well, I will say this. I'm a little concerned. I think the Commanders' defense is better than I thought. Like, the things they did to try to fix their defense, at least in week one. Now, granted, when you play the Giants, everything works defensively.
Yeah, they held the Giants to 3.7 yards per play.
But
it's pretty good.
They were tenacious.
You know who else's defense is better?
Rams.
I mean, I know that Brock Purdy may be hurt, and I know that George Kittle is hurt. But the 49ers defense was awful last year. They were injured.
Yeah,
and
their offense might be
Sal
awful.
Sal is back. What?
Their offense might be awful.
Yes, but anyway, so 200. They held Seattle to 230 yards of offense, 3 of 10 on third downs. San Francisco's 6, the Rams 7, Ravens 8. But what he said is, let's be honest, had the final 5 minutes gone differently Sunday, they'd probably be our number one team.
I think had the final 90 seconds gone
they
differently.
They were so dominant for so long. It feels weird to have them this low, and I agree completely.
I think literally if they go for it and get it on fourth down, we're talking differently.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back talk to Chris Boysen from ALSAC. We'll do that next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Chris Boysen from Well, he's senior vice president at ALSAC, which is, of course, the fundraising and awareness organization for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. The man largely responsible for putting together this epic matchup between the Memphis Tigers and the Arkansas Razorbacks for hoops for St. Jude. Welcome, Chris. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Jeff and Jeffrey. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. So tickets are on sale. Is that the news?
They are on sale as of noon today via Ticketmaster.com. You can also go to the FedEx Forum box office and get tickets.
So you can walk right up to the box office and get tickets there, or you can get them on Ticketmaster.
That's right. That's right.
All right. And did you price these like a regular? How does one decide what to? And of course, does every penny of this go to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital?
Every penny goes to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. That's I think part of the benefit of doing, and we can talk about that more in a second, but that's part of the benefit of doing a preseason game, because all the gate, all the sponsorship goes to us, and the FedEx Forum and the Memphis Grizzlies have been fantastic partners. Once again, they donated the facility and everything that goes with it. So we're very fortunate to have them as partners. We do price it kind of like a regular season game, but I think our one thing that we did this year that we listened last year, we heard about, you know, some of the fees that were associated that are out of our control, and we were able to negotiate those down with Ticketmaster. And then we're also, another thing that the Grizzlies do, they give us a rebate on some of those fees. So we're excited. We're really excited about this year.
So let's just do a little brief history lesson, first of all. Last year, obviously, it was the University of North Carolina, and then the South Carolina women came in. And let's not forget the fact that Vanderbilt women are coming in to play the Memphis women in this one. When you started it, you envisioned, you committed to 2 years. Is that the idea? And how do you view last year's in terms of, was it successful? Because I've heard some, I was disappointed. I didn't think it was disappointing. I thought, given that you threw it together sort of at the last minute, it was certainly respectable. It honestly turned out to be an important, it felt like, learning experience for the Memphis Tigers, which was part of this. Your thoughts on last year's event?
Look, you're right. We did commit to 2 years, and we were excited about the results of the first year. We had about a month of ticket sales, and we sold over 8,700 tickets, which we thought was fantastic. And so we couldn't have been more pleased with last year. And, you know, we set out both years to get an opponent that we felt would be able to bring in the crowds. And I don't think we could have done any better this year. And we tried last year to get or actually when we started, he was still at Kentucky. We tried to get Coach Cal. But we don't think we could do any better than bringing Coach Calipari home to Memphis in terms of bringing a game that people will want to see. And then Vanderbilt with Coach Shea Ralph and the Commodores are preseason ranked in polls anywhere from 12 to 18. They've got one of the best players in the SEC. So we're excited about her coming in, and we love being able to showcase the Lady Tigers as well.
So how does it come to pass? So you're putting this thing together, and you tried for Kentucky and Cal last year. And I think, honestly, it makes more sense. I mean, for a lot of reasons, it probably is better for the Memphis fans now that he's left Kentucky. It feels that now he's right across the river, sort of across the state, too, but over there. So it just felt sort of like a natural now that he's back. Now that he's at Arkansas, but how does one reach out to John Calipari and say, would you be interested in doing this?
You know, to your first point, I think you're right. The timing is right. I think a little distance equals a little healing, and having him move to Arkansas, we felt would enhance our chances. And then in terms of how we got to him, so his assistant, Lunisa, was at the University of Memphis as a student with Tim Duncan, and Tim Duncan knew her at the time, Tim Duncan, the associate AD at the U of M. He's the one that connected with her, and, you know, we wanted to make another run at him, and so she connected us to Chris Woolard, who is Coach Cal's director of basketball operations, used to be with Conference USA, so he's very familiar with Memphis. And so I had an initial call with Chris that Tim set up, and I told him about the game, and I told him that, look, we want to honor the players. And within a week, I got a call back from Coach Calipari himself, and he was really excited. He said they're in. He loved the idea of being able to honor the players, and that was, you know, that was one thing that we put front and center for him. And you know, immediately in that conversation, he started asking about St. Jude, how we're doing here, you know, what kind of successes we're having recently. Are we expanding our campus? How's the Pinch District doing? How's the city doing? You know, immediately he jumped in to that narrative. And it just reminded me what a champion he was during his time here. And obviously, if you know, you watch that press conference, Memphis is still deep in his heart. And so it honestly, it wasn't that hard.
It is striking, and that's one of the things. I think, honestly, love and hate, they're sort of flip sides of each other. It's one of the things that hurt so much when he left. I don't know that Memphis, in terms of obviously the Grit Grind Grizzlies were a champion in that way for the city, but in terms of standing up for the city and having a chip on the shoulder on behalf of the city and being immersed in the city, I don't know that there was ever anyone better than John, and you could see it again at the press conference. Like the things he talks of, his intimate knowledge of not just the Memphis that was 16 years ago, but that Memphis is today, is you can't help but be struck by it.
Yeah, you're right, Jeff. And I think another thing that stood out to me at that press conference, in addition to his championing Memphis, the people that came back to see him. We haven't seen them in a while, you know, and that was so heartwarming. And, you know, it was funny. You mentioned it in your column that Caroline Gonzalez, our PR person here, she gave instructions like, coaches, go backstage. We want to do some social media with you. And the first thing he did, he leaped off the stage. Totally ignored it. Ran out into the crowd, started giving out hugs. And it was, I talked to his staff after that. And to a person, they all talked about how genuinely thrilled and excited he was. But, you know, he talked again. We went to a luncheon over at Blue City after that he threw for some of those people that he invited. Kevin Kane generously hosted over there. And Coach again started talking about St. Jude, and he's really excited to be able to do this for not only the city but for St. Jude. And he was always so receptive when he was here coaching. I was able to call on him. He never said no to us. And, you know, it's champions like that and events like this that enable us to ensure that the great work at St. Jude continues, that no family ever receives a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food. And Coach Cal is thrilled to be a part of that.
Tickets on sale at noon. Today at Ticketmaster, also at the FedEx Forum box office for the Hoops
That's
for
right.
St. Jude basketball game. It's between the Memphis men and the Arkansas men. John Calipari returns, and then Vanderbilt's going to be coming over to play the women as well. Tickets on sale starting at noon. And you may not want to advertise this, but I did mention it in my column, and a birdie told me that that, let's be honest, one of the reasons teams do this is because they're able to get NIL money for their players. And one of that was originally part of the deal. And John called back and said, you know what, take that NIL money and let's send that to St. Jude, too, which is an awfully lovely thing for him to do. All right. So how is it going to work, Chris, with the obviously you're going to honor the former players? And I think you told me last week that the University of Memphis has been working on reaching out to them. What has been the level of success? What do you think the turnout's going to be? And do you know what it's going to look like in terms of honoring them at the event?
You know, yeah, they just had a meeting this past week on Friday that they've started planning. They've started reaching out to the former players. Initial response has been fantastic. I think you saw even a few of the players at the press conference, and they expressed their excitement about this. So we're looking to recognize them. We're doing a dinner the night before on the 26th. We're going to have them present with us. That was one of Cal's requests, and we're certainly excited to be able to do that. And then the night of, we're going to have a little bit of a program, and I'm sure there'll be some highlights of the successes of Cal's teams. And he also wanted to make sure that, you know, as we've talked to him, that we honor not only that, you know, 07-08 team, but all of his players. And I think we, you know, we counted them up. There's over 50 of them. So I think we're looking to be able to really enhance the event with that. We hope that that brings some additional interest from Tiger fans in particular. But we're really excited.
Talking to Chris Boysen from ALSAC. Do you have expectations? I think I would hope and imagine you will crush last year's number, even though last year was successful.
You know, yeah, we hope that we can do that. And then some. I would say north of 10,000 would be fantastic. I would be surprised if we don't smash that number. And we've already sold 2,000 tickets in pre-sale efforts before they've gone on sale to the public. Arkansas fans have been jumping on board. So Tiger fans out there, any season ticket holders, if you're looking to get your seat, you need to probably jump on that before noon today, because they've sold about half of what Memphis had sold up until last evening. The Arkansas fans are really responding. Everything that we're able to generate from this event in terms of sponsorships, ticket sales, the pregame dinner, it all goes to support St. Jude. And again, look, it's not just about St. Jude. We're excited to be able to shine a light on the city of Memphis. There's so much good in this town. We're so hard on ourselves in Memphis, and we love that we're able to bring that spotlight in a positive way, not just on this being a basketball city, but this being an incredible town to work in, to raise your family in. And, you know, we think that this is going to be a great forum for us. We've got ESPNU, another change from last year. Last year, the women were on ESPN+, which is streaming, which, you know, obviously has a less of an audience. This year, both games are going to be on ESPNU. So it's going to be a 5-hour infomercial about the city of Memphis and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And we're grateful to be able to have the chance to give back to Memphis in that way.
Talking to Chris Boysen again, tickets go on sale today at noon for hoops for St. Jude. And it appears you all have to act fast if you want to be a part of this. While I have you here, Chris, one other thing. I know you were instrumental in getting the marathon started, and I just love this story so much. I wanted to go over it again. So the marathon had gone defunct. Isn't that what had happened? Was it First Tennessee, or someone had ceased sponsoring the marathon in 2000? Is that what had happened?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. We wanted to get into the marathon business, and we had actually, you know, tried to partner with the previous sponsor. And about a year after we had made that run at it, an article hit the commercial appeal at the time, and it said that, you know, the event was folding. And so I called Wayne Rubenstein, who was the lead of the Memphis Runners Track Club, because they were partners in this. And we told him that, look, if you come and you operate this event from a logistics standpoint, let us market it, let us build this up, then, you know, we think we could have a great partnership here. And we met with them, and, you know, the last time they did the event, they had about 700 runners. They had a saying that this was the best little marathon in the country. And in our first meeting, I told them we will never say that again.
The word little. You wanted to strike the word little. Yeah,
we have effectively stricken that from any memory. And the first year we had about 2,800 runners. This year we'll have north of 23,000 runners from more than 80 countries in all 50 states. And that's on December 6th this year.
Oh, my gosh, you're going to have a busy fall. So one of the things that's hilarious about this is you, when this started, you weren't necessarily a runner. And then you started, as I gather, you started running the marathon early on along with it. As it grew, you came to realize that your logistical skills were needed during the actual event, so you couldn't run it. So now, is this still true? You either run the marathon or the half marathon before they begin, like just to make sure it's all cool?
That's right. You know, I get out on the course around 4 a.m., and I'll do, as I've gotten older, you know, Jeff, I know you understand the joints. I've seen you out on the trails before.
Yeah.
The body's a little less forgiving. I think I did the half a couple years ago. I did the 10K last year, and that's always fun to see, you know, all the activity of our volunteers. We've got over 4,000 volunteers that are the heartbeat of this event out there setting
up. What happened that one day on Beale Street, though? You're out there running the marathon. Tell the people.
So I was, yeah, that particular morning, I was doing the half marathon, and the course at that time went up Beale Street. So I always tried to stick to the actual course. And so I'm going east to west on Beale Street, and I get up into the heart of it, and there's an old fella out there who was working. He was sweeping the street from the night before, and there were still a few hangers on, you know, making their way out of the bars, heading back home. And so I come running up the street, and he rears up and looks at me, and he was obviously very surprised to see a runner already. He knew that he evidently knew this was part of the route, and he said, "Hey, you gonna win this effing thing, aren't you?"
All right. Once again, tickets on sale. Memphis versus Arkansas, the return of John Calipari, and all the festivities around that. It should be a spectacular night. But if you want to get your tickets, Ticketmaster today starting at noon, or you can go to the FedEx Forum box office. Chris, thanks so much.
Right. Jeff, Jeffrey, thank you so much for all your help.
Yeah, good to have you on. That's Chris Boyson. You're going to win this MF-er, aren't you? So I think it'll be a massive success, and it does sound like Arkansas fans are already responding. Memphis season ticket holders are responding. So if you want to get tickets to this event, you better act.
670 The Score's Mullin Haugh is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haugh Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Fast. Jeffrey, we have a very busy second hour. We got Chris Harrington, and then we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday. So I don't know if we're going to have time to get to some of the other things I wanted to talk about. But you mentioned yesterday, I'll squeeze this one story in real quick, that lots of people were noticing that Arch was grimacing.
Yes.
He would throw the ball, and there was particularly this one.
There's one where they had a low camera that zoomed in on his face.
And he's grimacing.
Yes.
Well, Sark, Steve Sarkisian, the head coach at Texas, was asked about this sort of yesterday, and he addressed it this way.
Arch Manning seemed to be having some throwing pains by the
according
fourth
According to
quarter.
Who?
Arch.
Arch said that to you?
No.
Oh, according to who?
It just looked like he was...
He doesn't have any.
Is there an explanation to why it looked like that?
I don't know. I've never filmed any of you guys when you're using the bathroom, so I don't know what faces you make when you're doing that.
All right, that struck me as a bit of a non sequitur, Jeffrey.
I'm also not.
What the hell?
I'm not sure of the connection between throwing and dumping. And
dumping off to the
right. I guess you hit your check downs, right, and you dump off.
He's obviously irritated by the question. Now, I'll say this. A grimace can be, my arm hurts, or it can be, that was a terrible pass. Or it can be, that was a terrible pass, so I'm going to pretend my arm hurts. Right? We've seen that.
Trust me, you've come to the right place.
Right.
Whenever you sail one, either sail like, you know, from catcher to throwing down to third, and you sail it in left field, the immediate move is just right here. Rotate that shoulder. And just let everybody know, like, hey, it didn't feel good. I mean, I've seen where there are people that believe that this is actually Arch's Manning face and that he does grimace on throws.
Mm-hmm.
That is highly unusual, is what I would say.
To grimace on a throw.
Correct. In the fashion that he did. Like, we all, like, have... Everyone can have some type of mannerism when they throw, but this one is still, to me...
He's watching.
I don't... To me, the other thing is... He has done a lot of other things that would suggest my arm hurts, like the dropping down to throw sidearm. The misses that he has are not just like college quarterback misses. They're like terrible.
Other college football news, the Memphis, Arkansas kickoff at 11 a.m. We learned that yesterday. That's not good, is it?
I mean, historically, Memphis does pretty well hosting an SEC team at 11 a.m.
At 11 a.m. That does not allow for as much lubrication.
No, it's also, if you were an Arkansas fan...
And it's going to be a hell of a traffic jam.
Well, I was going to say, if you're an Arkansas fan and trying to, you wanted to do day in, day out, that's going to be tough.
Well, yes, that's going to be tough. But just if it were a late afternoon, evening game, some people would arrive at 7 a.m., some people arrive at 9 a.m., some people arrive...
Everybody basically gets there
at
the same time.
Now everyone's going to be arriving there at the same time. And so, not ideal from that perspective, but... that should be a great event as well. And then did you see that Justin Fuente is being suggested he will be a new senior advisor to the college football playoff?
So Kevin showed me this story yesterday. My first question is like, does this have any real influence, or is this
I don't know. I'll say this. If I needed wisdom on tell me what these teams are like, help me get my mind. I don't know if he's going to be. If he's going to be advising the committee or he's going to be advising the structure.
Right.
But like, Justin Fuente is a smart dude.
Yes.
And he will shoot you straight.
Yes. I totally agree with all that. My question was not, oh.
I don't know. What's the impact?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I agree with you.
I don't know if it's meaningful.
If I were bringing him in to tell me what you think, I would very much enjoy knowing what he thinks.
Yeah.
But am I bringing him in just to say.
Also, a really good radio guest. Justin's great. Okay.
He's usually pretty honest.
Exactly. We got Chris Harrington coming up next. I didn't warn him about this, but you know, we only have about a month before camp starts, right? So we're going to have to do some rankings, Jeffrey.
Of course.
The Athletic, the Bounce newsletter, Zach Harper does it. He ranked the top 40 wings in the. Not the type you eat, not the buffalo type, the wings, like Kevin Durant, right? And do you think there's a grizzly amongst the top 40 wings, and where would they be?
Oof. I'm gonna say no.
You gotta say, so he did all five positions. He called them five positions, right? I would say wings, pretty freaking weak. Grizzlies have been trying to get wings forever.
Yes.
Right? It's funny. People say we're a great wing town. Not on the basketball court.
No.
We'll talk to Chris about that and other matters. And then we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.